Hello again, and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 124. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. I'm so pleased to share my recent conversation with market-savvy flower farmer Patrick Zweifel of Oregon Coastal Flowers. I know Patrick pretty well. I included his story as part of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market chapter in the 50 Mile Bouquet. And we've worked more closely this year because I joined the board of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market Co-op that Patrick and 15 other Oregon and Washington flower farmers launched in 2011. It was an honor to spend an extended period of time interviewing Patrick last week. His story is revealing because he so generously explains how he has weathered the highs and lows of his business. If you have any romantic notion that being a flower farmer is a dreamy way to commune with nature, I know Patrick's story will be both inspiring and sobering. It is not an idyllic existence. It is incredibly hard, endless work. It's a choice, but it is not an easy choice. Patrick's message is that if you can find your niche and be the very best in that niche, you might succeed. Being the best means producing excellent, high-quality botanical and floral elements. It also means the type of customer service you provide and the relationships you build with customers. Patrick tells us how cheap imports nearly ruined his core business, colored calla lilies. By 2008, he was faced with devastating losses of 85% of his total revenue, and Patrick was driven to save his company. He didn't give up. He didn't see that he had a choice. With a mortgage on his farm and family and employees to support, Patrick searched for a way to diversify Oregon coastal flowers. Hear the optimistic story of how he survived and moved beyond that episode to become even more solid in knowing his niche. This is a story of never giving up and being smart and resourceful enough to find a solution that satisfies your customers, to provide products that meet a need in the floral marketplace, and to find a new marketplace for those products. Hello again, and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. I'm here on the line with Patrick Zweifel, founder and owner of Oregon Coastal Flowers in Tillamook, Oregon. Hi, Patrick.
Hey there.
It's great to have you on the line.
Thank you. Thanks for calling me.
Oh, you bet. I'm so mad at myself. I still have not come down to see your amazing hydrangea farm.
You've been promising me for like 3 years now.
I know. This is going to be my public admission that I'm coming in 2014.
Okay.
Well, Patrick, you and I met through the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, and then we became friends, and we were able to include you in the 50 Mile Bouquet, and now you and I are on the board together with the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market. So we've got lots of points of contact. And the reason I wanted to have you as a guest on Slow Flowers Podcast is I think people can really learn a lot about where their flowers come from when they hear from a flower farmer. And your story is so compelling. Can you just talk a little bit about how you became a flower farmer and if that is even the right term for you anymore, because you do more than farming? How did you get started with Oregon Coastal Flowers?
Well, I actually studied dairy science in college, and at one point I was going to go on with my education, but I decided to come back on the dairy farm. And before I did that, I went to Switzerland for 6 months under a farm exchange program. Basically, I was looking for a Swiss wife, but I came back with a Polish one. And she actually had a horticulture degree. So then I came back on the dairy farm, and I just couldn't imagine myself doing that for the rest of my life.
And you had grown up on the dairy farm, right?
Right. Wow. So I really enjoyed the farming aspect, like outside, taking care of the pastures, things like that. But like the day-to-day management of the cows is not something that I loved. Mm. And really to do anything successfully, you really need to love it.
Absolutely.
So we started planting some things with Monica's experience. And I've always actually had a love for growing things. In fact, I actually applied to Cornell under plant science, but at the time, you know, I was running cross country and track. So that's, they didn't offer scholarships. So I went to Cal Poly, you know, to study dairy science because they had a great dairy science program.
And you did a little bit of cross country and track down there too, right?
Right. Yeah. So I always had that interest. So we started growing some cut flowers, started choosing products that would thrive on the Oregon coast, like hydrangeas and calla lilies, and quickly evolved into growing like color calla lilies. And at that time, you know, there was a pretty good program going in New Zealand, but there wasn't much for cut flowers in the United States. So
when was that roughly that you were doing the callas?
We just started in 1996.
Wow. So at the time you saw it as an opportunity to kind of own that category of the colored calla lilies.
Well, in some ways I got a little bit lucky or unlucky, is that there just was no one else doing it. So like you come out with this product, that actually really grows really well here on the coast because it's very mild, in the summer times. And then the market just kind of ate it up.
Wow.
So I quickly,
you were the calla guy for a long time then.
Well, I wouldn't say that. There's a company, Golden State, down in California, that they specialize in pot, bulbs for pot production. So I'm sure if they heard you say that, they'd kind of cringe. But at one point, as far as for cut flowers, I would, as far as for really good quality cut flower product line, I would say that, you know, I was the first person on the internet selling calla leaf flowers.
Wow.
There was a time where I'd fill up a FedEx truck with flowers going out for people's weddings.
Wow.
And of course now you got, you know, 200 online companies doing the same thing and it's all coming out of South America, you know, so.
That really, I remember you telling me that competition from being undercut on price by South American farms almost put you out of business.
Well, in fact, in 3 years, I lost 85% of my income in just 3 years. Fortunately, you know, and it came at a real bad time, just right when the economy, you know, really hit the bad recession. So
around 2000, around that period of time?
No, 2008, 2007.
Okay. I was trying to think of which down economy you were referring to.
Well, at that point I was just starting. So my business is growing so quickly that I didn't really recognize the recession. I didn't have time to watch the news. So, but yeah, so around 2008, 2009, just fairly recently, actually, literally lost 85% of my income in 3 years. With calla lilies, fortunately, you know, God really provides for me. So fortunately I was able to switch gears into more of a, forest products, flowering branches, any type of branch that you can imagine, those types of things. And actually, calla lilies is very, well, I'd have to be thankful that I was able to buy my farm, you know,
right.
I should say start buying my farm based upon the success of calla lilies. At the same time, it was a very difficult crop to grow and very risky. I mean, as much money as someone would spend on a house, I would purchase in bulbs every year.
Jeez.
And one, you know, a couple of years I'd have a complete, 1 year I had a complete crop disaster, lost everything, you know. And so fortunately I made enough money, I guess, to say that I was able to make it through that, but at the same time I didn't make any money.
So actually, all those sort of crises did have sort of forced your hand to become more diversified as a grower.
Yes.
With your crop mix, right?
Definitely. I was kind of bragging at the beginning how I was really in monoculture. I was really specializing on the only crops that I could do really, really well, grow them at a large scale, and really outcompete anybody else. I was really proud of that. However, had I been growing a diversity of crops like I am today, I really believe I'd be in much, much better position. And I really learned a lot of lessons. Now I have the belief that, you know, to grow a large variety of good quality products, and just plant a moderate amount. And if you need more, you can always buy more from neighboring farms.
Right.
So that way in a bad year, you can always sell yours. And if you're able to sell a whole crop, then you're going to make money. But when you get to a point where you're throwing half of it away, then that's a big problem.
Patrick, you alluded to the hydrangeas. Now, did you plant the hydrangeas roughly in the late 90s at that same time, or when did that get started?
Yeah, I did. It was a real, you know, with Martha Stewart, and she likes hydrangeas, so it was a real good market for that. And so I have about 6 acres of hydrangeas with, you know, natural shade. It's a very beautiful area. Now we hold weddings, but that's one market that is sells real well with my product mix.
Right, because it's a woody shrub, right?
Right. And, you know, of course, they have them from South America, but the quality is not nearly the same. So I think the market has held steady or increased over time, and I continue to plant new varieties. So that market continues to be pretty good for me.
So on that 6 acres, roughly how many hydrangea plants do you actually have in the ground?
Oh, well,
Or can you even count anymore?
Not per second, but as far as the number, I probably sell 180,000 stems a summer.
Wow. Wow. And you're, what I notice about your quality of hydrangea is that super deep, saturated, plummy purple, almost iridescent color. I know you have a lot of new varieties like those doubles as well. What are your, you know, what are your secrets? How do you make that work?
Well, for one, it's just the because right here on the coast, it's very cool summer. So, you know, when it gets real hot in the valley, it could be 90-100 degrees. It would normally, it would just just scorch your hydrangea.
Yeah, they would be unhappy.
But here on the coast, it could be foggy and 65. And, you know, occasionally we'll get a hot day here or there, and it does cause a lot of damage. But you do, you're still going to have a lot of good flowers on the plant. So yeah. The main thing is just a real cool climate. And that would be my main competitive advantage in that respect.
And the idea that there's so much romance around this flower still, and you mentioned having weddings, you actually have a separate dedicated business for weddings in the hydrangea fields, correct?
Yeah. So we built a wedding pavilion, an open-sided wedding pavilion kind of overlooking the hydrangea field. So we've got a 19th century church bell attached to the top of it. And so we got weddings lined up almost every weekend for this next summer. But in the summertime, I mean, it's just amazing. And another nice thing about my property is when you drive up on the road is parallel to the property. It's a real long, the property is over a half a mile long.
Wow.
A narrow strip along the Kilchis River Valley. So it's right along the river, but the road there's a road that actually, when you drive in along the property, actually overlooks the property. So you're looking down into this big field of hydrangeas and down into my flower fields. One of these days, I'm just going to drive off the road, actually looking down at my products.
That's so neat. You're still in love with that view. Yeah.
But actually the hydrangeas, that's really my favorite flower and always has been. To be honest with you, calla lilies, you know, I've had so many problems selling or growing or different things with calla lilies that every time I kind of get a sick feeling to my stomach sometimes, even when I think of a calla lily because of all the grief it's caused me in my lifetime.
Oh, I'm really glad that the hydrangeas have been kinder to you.
Yeah, they have.
Well, your strategy for selling also has really impressed me because you seem to be willing to take risks and bring product to your customer. And now you have been long established in the Oregon Flower Growers Association market in Portland, but also in Los Angeles, and now in Seattle. So how did that become part of your philosophy? And you know, why do you think more growers aren't doing that?
Well, I started that kind of philosophy is always going direct because when I used to do flower and garden shows to sell my bulbs, and I've since don't really do much retail anymore. But whenever I could take my product to a new venue, and so, and just because I kind of have a splash, I have nice, I make a good presentation.
Right.
I don't just do a fold a card table and sell flowers. I really make it presentable. So whenever I go into a new area, it's very successful. So I was doing the Seattle Garden Show, the Philadelphia Flower Show, the Cincinnati, San Francisco. I had a circuit. I was gone for almost 3 months and I really honestly didn't like my time away from my family, but I did like. I did learn how to sell products, you know, and products you couldn't necessarily sell to a wholesaler. So, of course, I was selling lots of calla lilies into the LA flower market wholesale. But when the market started to change, where the product became available from South America and cheaper, I had to do something. So either I was going to go broke or I'd have to just make some people upset with me. So as much as I like those people down there, I'd like my family better.
Yeah.
So I decided to get my own booth, and actually, you know, there's a 30-year waiting list to get into the LA flower market. It's just really, really difficult. But because I was able to have a good idea, something new and unique, most booths down in LA look exactly the same with imported product.
Right.
My philosophy or my idea was to bring the best products of the Northwest, what the Northwest has to offer, from not just myself but other growers, and bring things down into a truck in water. So not only you're bringing different products, we also bring products that perhaps can't be shipped in a box.
Right.
I've put trees in there. I mean, you can imagine the type of products that people order in LA.
Well, this is, I've visited your stall in the LA Flower Mart. So how big is that? How much, what's your square footage?
Well, to be honest with you, I had three small spaces. Well, I started out with one small space, and of course, you know, I'm getting out in the aisles, and then I ended up having three small spaces, which isn't obviously ideal, but it was necessary just to operate.
Just to get your product showcased.
Right. So last January, a new space became available right across from my space, which was like four times bigger, a big cooler. Everything's all in one place.
Yeah.
Of course, a little bit more expensive, but my sales have nearly doubled in this past year just because I have this one larger space now. Everything consolidated. Everything's much easier for my workers. So it's been very important to my business. But I have to say it's about 800 square feet.
Wow. And you have mostly, when you say the Northwest has to offer, it's the hydrangeas that you're growing. And then all of this forest, I mean, just for the umbrella term is the forest products that you are harvesting because you have been you've received permits to do so, correct?
Right. So we every 6 months we renew our permits. We got a permit to harvest over 50,000 acres in the state, Oregon state forest lands. And of course I'm right in the middle of the forest. So I just go right across the river. And that would include, you know, we sell a lot of alder poles. We sell a lot of moss products. But also as far as the best of the Northwest, you know, and of course I've been planting a lot of diversity like peonies, a lot of flowering trees like flowering dogwood, tulip magnolia. But we also buy from, you know, I'd say five or six growers mainly. And
so you're enabling those growers to have a market because you're kind of bundling their product in with yours.
Absolutely. I think I've got like three people that if you talk to them, today, I mean, I've helped them get through the recession as well, just because sales have dropped in most places, like for example, in Portland market. But I mean, I've made some growers very happy this past year when my sales doubled in LA. I can tell you that.
Wow. Because that's amazing.
I'm just trying to, my main job, my most important job that I have now is making relationships with growers and, you know, finding available product, always looking for that new thing. More so than even growing, because to be quite frank, you know, it's hard to make money farming. And
absolutely,
it really is. And when you're in a position to sell product, a lot of product, it's more profitable to actually buy it from other growers, to be honest with you.
Well, I also find, Patrick, that a lot of small growers who I've met, through, either the Northwest, you know, community or even nationally, people who have, you know, 5 to 10 acres or even 1 acre, they do love to grow and they don't love to market. And you've got this interesting, you know, kind of bipolar personality where you love to grow and you love to market. You've got this ability to see where the marketplace is going and then bring people along with you. That's pretty rare.
Well, I think I do have, you know, when I was in high school, I have a twin brother, and the senior classes was selling M&Ms to raise money to go to a graduation trip at Disneyland. Right.
Oh my goodness. My
brother and I single-handedly sold enough M&Ms to pay for the whole senior class to go to graduation.
I can sell
a lot of things. So
that's funny.
And to be honest with you, you know, the business was kind of, because of the Cowleys, is really kind of artificially big. Mm-hmm. And I bought this farm, you know, and I've got these payments based upon buying this farm. And most of the time in agriculture, you know, either you're doing something really small or, you know, when you have a farm my size, generally it's through the family, you know what I'm saying?
Right. You inherited it or something.
This I bought on my own. And when you got this type of business and all of a sudden you lose 85% of your income, I mean, either you're going to go out of business or you got to get creative.
Right.
So I look at the flower business, you know, I like to grow. I love to have a farm, but I also realize that I need to be a business person.
Yeah.
And I honestly, like I said, the most important things I can do is figure out how to sell more, sit in the office and figure out how to sell more and how to buy more, than it is going out and pulling my own weeds.
Absolutely. Well, how many acres do you have?
64 acres.
And, you and Monica and your daughter live at the farm as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, your success in Los Angeles, I I think that there must be something special in what you're bringing to that market, because as you said, most of the product is imported. I mean, this is an American grown story, and it's just one state away. So people are never going to see moss covered branches growing in Southern California. I mean, that's just simply not what the climate would produce. So you've got something that there's a desire for, but you have to bring it to them. They have no other way to access that kind of diversity of wood products.
Right. That's correct. And also the diversity of product from other growers. There's a lot of small growers here in the Northwest, or actually everywhere in the United States, that really focuses on specialty products in that area. And there's just so many of those products that actually aren't commercialized the item that really works to ship and to sell to wholesalers. But because I'm going down there, I'm able to gather up all those products here in the Northwest and offer a product line that is really special.
And I didn't realize you were shipping everything in water. That keeps it fresher as well, right?
Yeah. So you're not taking it out of water. You don't lose that. Plus you don't have the packing costs. You don't have the unpacking costs, the rehydration. Of course, there's a lot of grooming. I mean, it's not always perfect. Things fall over.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a perfect system. However, it's really given us an advantage by having a product line that really is, you know, of course you got people always, as soon as they see something that sells, for example, like the wood slices, I was the first person in LA to sell wood slices, you know, little cake platter type things.
Right. And you use them, people use them for tabletop displays and right. Either at a wedding or in a retail shop, that kind of thing, right?
I just spent 5 days with my manager from LA. He was up here for the holidays. And he says that every booth in the LA flower market has these little cake slices now. I mean, they cut the last tree in LA County based upon trying to get these slices.
Trying to copy Oregon Coastal Flowers' brilliant idea.
That's right. So you always have to keep getting better and always have to keep doing new things. But there's some certain hurdles for someone who wants to, when wholesalers see me down there and trying to, you know, it's just not really easy to find some of the items I find.
Well, it's interesting because I, you know, when I talk a lot about using local products and using seasonal products and, you know, in the Seattle area with the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, you and I both know that for the last two winters at that Seattle Growers Market, if it wasn't for Oregon Coastal Flowers product coming in, the conifer branches, the colored twigs, the pussy willow. If it wasn't for you, Patrick, there'd be very little for the local florist to come in and buy. So winter is an important time of year for you. In a way, you own the category.
Well, certainly, I like to have more things available. But I used to make 90% of my income in 3 months: July, August, September. Now, my slowest month of the whole year is July and August.
That's crazy. It's backwards.
I get 2 weeks of vacation. When I say vacation, I mean very, very few employees to manage. Mm-hmm. Still working around the holidays. But right now we're gearing up for the Chinese New Year. So January is very busy, and February, March, April are crazy busy. Actually, my most profitable months.
What happens at Chinese New Year? What's the product that you're selling?
Forsythia and quince.
Okay. I saw your quince yesterday up here in Seattle, and it's gorgeous. It's white, but it has a little kind of peach blush to the bud.
Yeah, well, this time of the year, because we're forcing it, it's actually a salmon color. But okay. When you force it early like this with heat, it's more light, and actually it'll darken in color with time. But
if you just naturally let it bloom at the time it wants to bloom.
That's correct. The same branch. And actually, if you left that branch outside, even if you already have it cut, it'll come out darker salmon than if it was in a warm room.
Wow.
But I've been planting a lot of new quince, a double quince, and it's really, you got a real, so really, really large flowers, like, you know, 2-inch flowers, and they're giving
right.
a double.
Oh my gosh. When are those going to get to the marketplace?
Some tips maybe this year, but next 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. The bad thing about all these woodies, you know, planting wise, I've planted a lot of things the last 5 years on my farm. It takes a lot of time long time to get this stuff going. So.
Right. In fact, you know, in retrospect, that's the first thing you should have planted, right?
Right. Like I said, if I would have been doing all this stuff 20 years ago, I think I'd be sitting in Hawaii right now.
Patrick, one of the things that you do so well is because you have customers who are probably in every state of the country, because you still do a lot of shipping, correct?
Yeah, about 60% of my business is shipping product outside of the state. Wow. Not including the flower markets. So.
Right. Direct, like, boxes of product being shipped, right?
Or bags, yes.
Okay. Your email communications are like reading a travel log. They are so beautiful. And you really have finessed this idea of telling the story of who you are as a farmer so that people feel like they're getting a little glimpse of life on the farm in Tillamook, Oregon, when they receive your email in their inbox. How did that all come about? And are those your photographs?
So first of all, I love photography. So I take a lot of pictures. Whether it be my phone or, you know, just I take my good Nikon camera out to the beach or something. But, you know, like I said, I used to, when I first was selling lots of calories, I had a salesperson or two salesperson in the office, you know, and I really struggled, you know, when the market became poor. But I found that I do the best job selling my own product just because I know it really well. And, you know, for example, in the past, I used to pay someone to build a website or to do an advertising campaign, and any money that I've ever spent paying somebody else to do my marketing, whether it be advertising or website work or anything like that, has always been money wasted. So I really have always, in 1996, I had my first website that I built. And that was when, you know, I just learned, I'm fortunately pretty technical savvy.
Right. You sort of just figured it out and did it.
Rather than like, I really don't like becoming reliant on somebody else to where I have to call them to fix something for $75 an hour. I prefer just to learn how to do it myself. So continually the past 15, you know, I guess it'd be 15 years, 16 years, I've continually always tried to keep up with the latest. Every 2 or 3 years, I'm updating my websites. And as far as the email communications, I tried to, you know, one thing I found when selling is that although I make, for some companies, I'm big, but overall, when I deal with wholesalers, I'm a small company. Okay.
Sure.
And when I try to be very honest with people, and when I say something, when I say I'm going to do something, I always do it. Where I, you know, obviously there's sometimes problems. You have to call them and say, hey, I oversold or I made a mistake. But I found that when you're honest with people and just try to do a really good job, you know, that's really good in business. You know, there's actually very few people that actually are honest nowadays.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. Sadly, you're right.
But when you do emails like this and you present your family, show pictures of family, and then people talk to you on the telephone and they make that connection, that's really, there's a sense of loyalty there. And that's really what I'm, you know, trying to build a client, you know, a clientele that really values my.
Your word.
Yes.
So they have a connection with you. They've met you either by phone or in person. Now they're seeing photos of your beautiful farm, the people on your farm, your family, your employees, and they can picture themselves there. They can see that there's a piece of Oregon that they want to bring to their region.
Yeah. In fact, one of my actually tagline for my email every week is it says Oregon Coastal Flowers, and right below it, it says nice enough to share a piece of the Oregon coast with the rest of you.
Well, good. We'll put some links to that so people who aren't currently receiving that newsletter can maybe sign up. I'll put some links on my show notes and maybe share a few of your photos. What's on your plate for 2014? You alluded to these awesome quince that you're growing, but I bet you've got lots more planned in the works that you're trying to bring to the marketplace. Anything that you can talk about, or is it all top secret?
Oh, well, I wouldn't say top secret. It's just product line that I lack, I'd have to say, is fall product line, like leaves, red leaves, that type of stuff. It's a real strong market for that. So I've been planting some oak trees the last couple of years. Of course, we've got the new pistachio hydrangeas that kind of the tricolor red, blue, you know, really pretty.
They are beautiful.
Of course, we got the new quince that's going to start this year, and we continue increasing our production of peonies.
If it can be harvested, you can figure out how to sell it.
Yeah. I mean, selling's the easy part. I could sell just about anything. The thing is, you've got to back up what you say. But you give me 3 minutes with anybody, I can sell them something. So.
Well, I really love what you, one of the things that you mentioned earlier is that the alder poles, I mean, alder is kind of a weed in Oregon and probably people overlook it. And here you're making these beautiful huppas and arbors and, you know, kind of display items that wedding and event designers can use. Is that still going strong?
Yes, alder's been a really good product for us because birch is something that people really recognize the name of and really want in the marketplace. And of course, I don't have any birch, but alder is actually a little different shade of white, not such brilliant white, but has a little bit of moss and lichen to it. And as long as I'm upfront and honest to tell people, hey, this isn't birch, it's alder, but you're going to be happy with it. I've never had a call to say someone wasn't happy with it. But it sells a lot of that, just in poles, wood products, and building these arches. During the summertime, we probably make three to five of those every week.
Well, and the interesting thing is that the rustic, romantic meadow farm wedding is not going away, and that design of yours and using the alder fits that aesthetic so perfectly.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think I hit that market at the right time, and I never actually thought of myself as a creative type person, but obviously I'm able to come up with some creative things that I do with these products. So,
you know what? Your mind is always working. You are such a good balance of right brain, left brain, Patrick, where you've got your creativity and your photography and your product development and just how you take maybe a humble product and elevate it to something really special and really valuable.
Well, I pride myself on the products that people around my area cut out of their yard and throw away. I pride myself on selling. So,
well, before we go, I want to just ask you to talk a little bit about your other love, which is track and field. Because if people have been to your website or received emails from Oregon Coastal Flowers, they're starting to see that you have a huge track field. I don't know what you call it, a track installed on your farm now, right? For people to run and do competitions?
Yeah, actually, two and a half years I've been coaching. I coach cross country and track. I'm a distance running specialist coach. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I love it. I mean, I just, at this point, can't imagine my life without coaching. It's just amazing for me to be able to do that. So I have created an 8-lane life-size track on my property. I planted cherry trees on both the inside and outside so that my dream is that in 20 years from now, I'd have a big track invitational during cherry blooming season.
Oh my goodness.
I've got all these flowered magnolia trees, everything planted around it. Of course, right now we just have a mulch surface. So once someone donates a couple $100,000, I can put a real surface.
you can get an Olympic quality track in there.
That's right. Well, eventually it will happen. And then also I have a trails on my farm that I built specifically just for a cross country race. And, of course, I've used my marketing skills that I've learned in business to apply toward my coaching. And in 2 years' time, I've started what I call the ultimate cross country race. So it's a cross country race for high school kids during cross country season. Wow. And in 2 years, we built it up to one of the top three largest cross country races in all of Oregon, at 71 teams and 2,000 runners. And that's just my second year. By my third year, I'm sure I can surpass. Nike has a big meet. My goal is to be bigger than Nike this year.
Wow, that is so exciting. That's so neat. That's the other reason to bring people to your farm. It has nothing to do with flowers. It's just that the venue is so beautiful for cross country.
Right. So, you know, when most people will choose a place to put a cross country race on, I'm actually building my farm. I have this vision of this race. So I'm planting things in pathways and trails based upon where I want this pathway to be. So I kind of look at my farm as like my painting canvas. Mm-hmm. So I'm painting this big vision of mine. So if you ever see an aerial shot of my farm, which I've shared, you know, you see a track, you see this trail, you see the corn maze, it says Ultimate Cross Country Race. This next year, I want to try to get the Oregon dairy farmers to sponsor us for chocolate milk. So I'm going to put a big drink milk, you know, in my corn maze. So it's just those
how fabulous.
Creative marketing ideas are really beneficial, and I just love the coaching aspect of, you know, what I'm doing now.
Oh, that's really neat. I mean, you're mentoring all these young people and giving them an amazing outlet, and who knows, maybe a few of them will decide to follow in your footsteps.
Well, they'll certainly run. I'm not sure how many growing flowers, but.
That's great. This has been such a great interview. I am so thrilled that you were willing to carve out a little bit of time to talk. And I'm just curious, what have I not asked you, Patrick, that you wanted to talk about today? Because we should end on that note. Anything that we didn't bring up?
I think you did a pretty good job of covering it.
Okay, well, that's great. And I am making my public promise to come visit you. And I think I'm going to have to come in May because when do the hydrangeas really look awesome? Later in the summer?
About the 1st of July is when they look that's when they start looking. About the middle of July is when they look their best. And then it goes through the 1st of September, probably.
Okay. Well, I mean, they will, if my promise to you hasn't gotten me there, the hydrangeas will get me there. Okay. So I look forward to that. And we'll share some of those yummy photos on my show notes next week when we air this interview.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon. I know you're going out to coach.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick.
No matter how beautiful or fresh the bloom, domestic farmers like Patrick Zweifel face competition on price, especially from importers who buy from low-wage countries. As the American-grown message increases and as more consumers see value in the origins of the flowers they choose in the marketplace, that playing field will be leveled out. There will always be people who choose cheap first, yet conscious consumers are voting with their values and their dollars and focusing on other important product attributes like seasonal, local, sustainable, and in Patrick's case, unusual and hard to grow or ship from South America. When I interviewed him for the 50 Mile Bouquet, Patrick told me, "I would have been out of business if I didn't start harvesting Oregon forest products. You can't grow this stuff in South America, or even in too many places in the U.S. You're right, Patrick. The woody, mossy, lichen-draped branches and boughs that he offers the marketplace are truly special. I'll share lots of photographs from his farm's offerings on my website, deborahprinzing.com, and you can look for links to follow and subscribe to his beautiful e-newsletters. Thank you for joining me in this episode of the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. Because of your support as a listener, people have downloaded this podcast more than 5,000 times. I thank you for taking the time to join my conversations with flower farmers, florists, and other notable floral experts. If you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Hannah Holtgertz. Learn more about her work at hhcreates.net.